And the idea would never cross my mind. In America, of course, it would be totally different. They're always going to see their shrinks. But that is for somebody with no self-esteem whatsoever. And I think you will have gathered by now that I'm not short in the self-esteem department.
On the contrary, I would say that you are actually very short of self-esteem. I'd say that grandiosity and arrogance are, as to a shrink, they are very much often a sign of the opposite of what they seem to be. That I would say that you are far less confident about yourself and feel far more anxious about who you are and far more in need of giving, of kicking everyone and trying to make a big fuss and be the centre of attention than you realise.
When I hear this kind of double talk and mirror speak, I remember that, that old saying that anybody who goes to see a shrink really needs a shrink, right? I'm afraid that occurs to me.
No, I can understand you. I can understand.
If it wasn't for my total sense of normality, I would never be able to sustain the ordeals that I've been through the last 3 months. If there was the slightest imbalance in me.
But
I remember
we've agreed that there is an imbalance in you. We've agreed about that, that you do have, to put it very simply, insecurities and to something of an inferiority complex.
I remember 1980...
Did we not agree that?
1980,
just
now? That's what they were kept on saying to me in court. Haven't we just agreed that, Mr. Irving? Now, about 1980, my secretary, a frightfully nice young man called Robin, came up to me one Monday and he said, David, did you see what the Sunday Times wrote about you yesterday? They say you've seriously overestimated your mental stability. That's what it actually says. They're calling you mad. And I said, and? He says, well, that pack up. You've finished. Your career as a writer is over. And just exactly as he said just now.
I'm not suggesting that you're mad.
I said, Robin, relax. It is now already Monday. Tomorrow that newspaper will be wrapping fish and chips. Or if it's lucky, it will have been recycled. The paper will become another Sunday Times. The ink will have been flushed down the drain into the gutter where the journalists find it to write more such rubbish next week.
Yeah.
And that's my stability. I can take that kind of thing on the chin, turn the other cheek and carry on writing.
Yes, but you may well be right that that is a sign of stability, that you can do that. But I don't think that's addressing the point I was trying to make, which I didn't express terribly well, perhaps. But the side of you that... if you like, build yourself up as impregnable, the side of you that that is what you're calling arrogant, that feels the need to misrepresent yourself as arrogant when in fact you're probably not. What you are is actually confident.
I'm deeply disappointed.
That aspect of you that is doing that is perhaps somebody who does feel, you know, inferior and does feel very insecure and vulnerable.
You think
it's your vulnerability is so invisible here at this moment where you have, whatever you say, the fact is that you have been pilloried in the press and you have been, you know, you may not feel ruined.
I'm accustomed to being
pilloried. There's a huge gulf between...
I have this utmost contempt for the press, and here's a great surprise for the gentlemen of the press. The public has the greatest contempt for the press as well. Mm-hmm. And this is what gives me my confidence in this matter. I think you may be actually... right to a certain degree. We are all islands. We are all carapaced in whatever we decide to shield ourselves with, to protect ourselves from the hostile glares and stares that we imagine people are casting on us. I'll let yourself into a secret. Before the trial began, I went to one of the most expensive tailors in Savile Row and had this suit made. And my family thought I was crazy. And I said, this will give me a great sense of confidence in court. That I'm standing there in an expensive pinstripe suit, slightly better than the suit worn by Mr. Rampton, and undoubtedly better than the suit worn by the judge beneath his robes. The converse being, I remember Field Marshal Milch, when he was put on trial at Nuremberg, he told me, he said he knew he was going to be in for an ordeal, but the best way he could get over it was by imagining all the judges sitting on the bench who had the power to sentence him to the noose, sitting there in their underwear, which is another common trick, of course. But I don't think this is a sign of any kind of clinical sense of inferiority. I think everybody has this sense that they need, just the same as a woman needs a good hairdo.
I don't think I would remotely want to be suggesting to you that you're mad. I really am not suggesting that. But I am suggesting that there are perhaps some quirks or even kinks in your personality which derive perhaps from feelings of inferiority and
eccentricity. John Stuart Mill said the borderline between genius and eccentricity is very narrow, didn't he? And
yes.
I'm not saying I'm genius, but I'm quite happy to accept that I'm eccentric.
Yes.
But I'm trying to become a genius.
But do you think that you have enough... I think you need more insight into yourself.
I think it's too late for that. Insight would have been useful 20 or 30 years ago. when we're coming in onto the home stretch now, if I can put it like that, I think insight is too late.
Well, I think you've been extremely courageous in being prepared to talk to me like this
Not for so long. What do you actually do? What is your task?
I trained as a clinical psychologist, and then I've written quite a few books about sort of psychology.
Now, are you on anybody's staff or anything at present?
Not anymore, because I've made lots of television programmes.
Oh, yeah. That's where the money is. Ask Anthony Clare. But I think he's now become a little bit too pop to be taken seriously.
He's a joke, frankly.
Yeah. And he's...
He irritates the hell out of me, actually.
Well, I don't like the Irish accent. And he was quite dishonest with the programme he did with me, and then he published a book on it, and of the transcripts. I was one of his first six victims.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
I didn't know that.
With Glenda Jackson and George Brown. And
in the very first series?
The very first six.
Really?
We were the first six. And I looked at the other names, and I thought to myself, I'm the only one I don't know. All the other ones I know. And
hang on a second, let me just check that they're happy.
What would you like to do?
Yeah.
What I'd like to do is just go over Mr. Irving's shoulder and take a few...
Exactly. Can I have a pee before you do that?
There's no more coffee where that one came from, is there? can you ask them outside?
I'll ask.
Because that was really very nice. Okay, he's getting them.
I'm sorry, I hope I didn't disturb you going in and out.
I didn't notice, did you?
I got a very bad cold and I was going out to have a coffee.
I didn't notice you.
Good, I'm pleased about it.
Goodness. My little child's got a cough too, so her mother's put her in my bedroom so that
How
I...
How old is your little one?
Six.
Lovely little girl. She's four at the moment. Oh. She gave me this one.
Aren't they fun at that age?
Amazing. That's
I feel
amazing.
So sorry for people who don't have children.
Yes.
It's the whole meaning of life.
Absolutely. I've got another one on the way now.
But they're a source of enormous sorrow when things go wrong.
Yes.
What would be the absolute nightmare would be to have a child who's a drug addict or something like that.
That would be awful, wouldn't it? Absolutely awful.
And there's no antidote to it. There's nowhere really of stopping it. Except, I always say to myself, what on earth do university students do it for? Here they are, they're supposed to have all the brains, and yet they get hooked on drugs. Yeah. And that's what worries me most of all.
The thing which is parenthood has taught me is, I think that, whereas I used to... look at children and say, why doesn't that
problem? And it's interesting going into people too. All the little things, watching them learning to speak. I remember our joy we had when about 3 years ago she in her one of her first constructive sentences she said, I don't want this one here, I want that one there. And I'm afraid I'm totally obsessive with children. I write everything they say down in my diary, all the clever things they say. And this was the cruel thing when my eldest daughter then killed herself. I then went back to the very first diaries and read what she'd say when she was small.
That must be something you don't get over easily. Having a child commit suicide is an awful thing.
You never get over it.
Absolutely.
But presumably you're...
She was paranoid schizophrenic.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. She became schizophrenic at 18 during the A levels, which is quite a common time for it to happen.
It is, yes.
And you have a terrible sense of guilt.
Yeah.
Because you wonder, is it your genes that have done it, or is it nobody knows? Nobody knows the answer.
No, they don't. That's right. Did the
I'll run the camera just.
And then all the crooks come along, like the priory saying, "Oh well, send her here." And then you're getting £2,000 a week bills. And I took her out after 2 weeks and I said, you're doing nothing. You're just keeping her locked up downstairs and feeding her tablets. I can do that.
So you stayed in touch with the with your first family?
Unfortunately exploded the first family.
Keeping in touch.
If you've ever had anything to do with a family who have had a schizophrenic child, it will destroy any family.
Yeah.
It is like an acid on a stone.
At what point did your... first marriage end? It was
very shortly after. We got the diagnosis in Harley Street in January 1981, and on the day after I got the diagnosis, my first wife vanished for 3 months. She couldn't take it. Where has she gone? It turned out she was living somewhere at Earl's Court. She just left me stuck with the children, and because of this, what we had thought was just a behavioural problem. we then, because as a parent, you don't recognise it.
It's also not a black and white diagnosis.
I can spot a schizophrenic now at a range of 20 feet.
Yeah.
I mean,
but it's not.
Shaking the legs, the jerk in the head, all the little things.
Oh, that's just the pills that make them do that.
Oh, no. This was before the pill, the medication started. They got the little
1981,
jerk.
They had pills.
And the inappropriate behaviour, the little laughter, the giggles that come for no reason, all the stuff that you can spot it now, but at the time you didn't know it, and you saw it as behaviour.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't wish it on. Well,
so your first your first marriage lasted 18 years.
19 or 20 years. Yeah,
right.
And she's still very much in touch because she phoned 2 days ago to say, David, what on earth is going wrong? The press account downstairs on the doorsteps, and they're telephoning all the children. And the children, she said, well, none of us are speaking to them, but they're going to start inventing things again, aren't they? Mm. And I said, well, it's just unfortunate the way the press works. So you're then stuck with two alternatives. Either you maintain a dignified silence in the face of the press and let them say what they want. But in this occasion, I decided, after having said I would do that, when I heard this awful Lipstadt woman's Bronx accent.
She is black, nauseating.
Bad-mouthing me all over the media. I thought, A, she's irritating all the viewers with that accent, and now I'll go on with my nice English voice.
I thought John Keegan
voice.
Was quite funny about him.
Oh, he was naughty. Oh, he shouldn't have said that. Very improper.
Yeah, it was quite funny.
I've forgiven him everything he said in the witness box after he wrote that.
Well, bloody hell, you'd be lucky to get a more positive piece of journalism than that.
Yes, and it's been published all over the world. It's in La Stampa, it's in Le Monde, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
I know these things, you don't. That's why you say, but your reputation stinks. And I say, oh, no, it doesn't. Yeah. It's exactly the situation developed that I would have wanted, with some people saying he's awful, other people saying, no, he's great.
Well, I'm actually the first person to take the view that, that the majority is by no means always right. In fact, the majority, by most of the time, is completely gobsmackingly wrong and has been. Yes. Let's take Nazi Germany for a start, where clearly complete madness took over.
Somebody sent me a letter this morning.
You don't have to persuade me of the principle of the thing. I'm prepared to believe.
A three-line letter in today's Daily Telegraph from somebody yesterday saying, Mr. Irving is now in the position that historians can only dream of. His name is now one of the best-known names in the world. And somebody wrote me a letter this morning saying, Wagner's Tannhäuser, when Wagner's Tannhäuser was first performed in the Jockey Club in Paris, it was hissed off the stage, and Gounod said to him that evening, I could only dream of having a shoot like that, a disaster like that, because, of course, it was now destined to be a total success from that point on, after that start. And it's not the way to do it. It's not a very nice way to do it.
It's
a horrendously hair-raising. I mean,
I think
where my grey hair comes from. It's from
this kind
of life.
Very well advised. Speaking as a psychologist, I would say to you, I would really think carefully about this, because I don't doubt that you will make an appeal. Presumably the appeal won't succeed for whatever reason, whether because the whole fucking system is stacked against you or however it works. I can't believe that.
I'm beginning to suspect that.
I can't believe the appeal will succeed. You will, because I can see that you are somebody who's a human being, you're going to have some pretty fucking rough times in yourself in the next year or two. I mean, God knows what you must have been through in the last 3 months anyway. Make sure that when you do hit those rough times, make sure you allow that to happen. Allow yourself to feel bad, because it will feel bad.
I don't think. Let me tell you what I did when I came back from Florida on Monday.
But then you'll be all right.
I arrived back from Florida Monday morning, overnight. Had an hour's sleep. Went down to the High Court to pick up the judgment, which the judge's clerk came down and gave to me. And I took Jessica with me because her mother has cancer and she's in a very bad way.
Yeah.
So I took her with me to the High Court, and we got in the cab. I hailed a cab. Just halfway around the Old Bridge, I turned straight to the back page, saw that I'd failed, closed that volume, didn't read it for the rest of the day. And I said, Jessica, we'll go home, we'll put your bike. And I bought her a bike in Florida. I'd carried that back on the plane. That's right. Carried it back on the plane. We spent the whole afternoon assembling the bike, bolting it together. I took her out in Grosvenor Square to let her ride it. Did nothing about reading the judgment then until about 10 o'clock that night. I read it till 4 in the morning. That's been the worst part of the trial, carrying the whole trial myself, having to be in the courtroom all day and prepare for the next day, and sometimes until 4 in the morning. One morning, 5:30 in the morning, and be back in court at 10.
But reading that judgment must have been a nightmare. Surely.
Increasing exhilaration as I read the judgment and realised how wrong he had got it on matters of history and the possibly false belief.
But I would just say to you, you will have, at some point, it'll catch up with you what's really happened.
That's where children help.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
If I was by myself, then it might be a terrible disaster.
Yeah.
I'd be out there.
No, I'm sure you'd be okay. I'm sure you'd be okay. But I'm just saying, you know, don't. All I'm saying is, when it does come, don't be scared and don't worry, because it'll happen, and you will feel pretty shitty.
Now, what I do then? I'll jump in a plane and go to Florida.
Yeah.
I'm solar powered. When I finished the closing statement, I jumped in a plane the next day and went to Key West, which is one of my favourite places, and I got a house, a little cottage, and I had the people in Key West.
But aren't you going to lose all this stuff?
It doesn't belong to me.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I may not even lose the flat in Duke Street.
Right.
I would say it's 50-50 on that.
Right.
They'll take everything else.
Yeah.
But I've already said, this nearly happened in 1970 when we lost a PQ-17 libel action, Captain Broombroad. And I said to my, on that occasion, a time came when we were denied leave to appeal unless I put £20,000 to court within 10 days of having absurd, a huge sum of money, it says. And I very nearly got bankrupted. We were within 2 or 3 days of bankruptcy then. And I never told my wife, because I thought, there's no point sharing this burden with somebody else. If it happens, then I'll tell her. And I told her afterwards, and I said, if it had happened, the way to look at it is this. Very few, we've now been married, what, at that time, 10 years, and the best time in our life was the first year or two when you're starting off with nothing and putting things together.
Yeah.
And how few people get the chance to do that.
That's a good one. Always look on the bright side.
I was about to say, that phrase did spring to mind at that point, I have to say.
Yes.
Right, well,
thanks very much, both of you, for spending so much time doing this. Sorry about that.
It's really fascinating.
Beginning phrase with all the, you know, cameras.
Wow, it's all right.
It's good to be sort of...
Always happens.
I enjoyed it. Patience, anyway.